This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
Welcome back anyway. Ofsted had been speaking about the... They had been speaking about it, actually. The Times, I think, second-guessed them and said, oh, we think that you'll be changing the declarations of Ofsted from one word to something else. And everyone online was speculating about what that something else could be. And it turned out to be absolute nonsense. Nothing at all. There was no actual change in policy. They weren't going to announce anything. Instead, it was false information. So I think it created a lot of speculation online. People were interested in it and thinking about the what would it be replaced by. And I certainly on Twitter, people were sort of jubilant about it. We've never been so excited about something. It's very interesting what we get excited about and what we get angry about, isn't it? And I think you'll find that people get very passionate about the things that they think are having a gigantic impact, but also the small things. I've got a story about that in a moment. Lots of suggestions were made. I suggested emojis could replace the different categories. So you could have a pooey emoji, thumbs down, thumbs up, and then a crown. Other people suggested that we could have very in front of the words. It's really, really good. It's a good idea to have lots of people suggesting different things. What is interesting is that is the level of vocal interest in this and the amount of people that were interested in wanting to cover the issues itself. And people talking about the fact that change was needed. And it's very interesting to see in light of Ruth Perry and the inquiry and the so-called big listen, where the questions have been derided largely by lots of people online. The big listen doesn't seem to be a big listen so much as a answer our specific question in a certain way listen. It doesn't seem very open and has been quite frustrating that people want to see this sea change in Ofsted and the way that it's reported, because it's very frustrating. We appreciate things that can be measured, and that's useful to have a measurement. We're interested in statistics, but it seems like an incredibly blunt tool, and a blunt tool that's created over 2 days. If we think about it as a holiday, it's like taking a 30-minute snapshot, if that, at any point in the holiday. Incredibly frustrating. Because it could be a good point of the holiday, a bad point of the holiday, but we're looking at the holiday overall and the journey overall of a school, which doesn't seem to be able to be picked up on in a sweeping visit, 2 day visit, 3 day visit, by people who don't actually know the school, the context, the environment, the social status, unless it is on some sort of number or word system. So change is brewing. I definitely think that we should be regulated as a profession, and as an industry, but it'd be interesting to see what people come up with as suggestions. It also reminded me of something that someone that I read online the other day, where a teacher was at a course with about 60 teachers, and they said at the start that attendees weren't able to bring in their own hot drinks due to health and safety. And apparently the teachers kicked off so much that they backed down. Now that is commitment. I love that. We go to another feature that I really like called the Old Age Teachers.
Old age teachers.
So I am an old age teacher. I've been teaching for a quarter of a century, and I've got into little habits and routines that make my life easier. And this is a really good one for, especially for this point in the year, where children are sometimes on their, or about to start their second book. And if you go, oh, my children on their third book, then well done you. Good old you. But lots of children are on their second book. And one thing you can do when they're on their second book is you stack up their first book, and it can get quite confusing. You'll have some children, certainly in primary, who will try and get away with using their old book or their new book or keeping both. And this is a little strategy that I use to make life much easier for me, is I cut the top corner off the old book cover. It's really easier to glance to see whether it's the old book or the new book. Really easy to keep track of where they are, easy to spot whether there is a new book hidden among the old books, because we are using them all the time for moderation, especially in year six. And it's a really handy way of tracking them. So cut the corners off your book. I did use a system in the past where I cut the corners of the pages up to the page that the children were using, which I think that... it worked really well up to a point. So I tried it out. It didn't work. But it's worth experimenting with those sorts of things. Certainly, here's some strategies that you can do too in terms of books. When you're asking the children to hand the books in, get them to hand them in, if you're going to mark them that day, open. Have a pile open and literally on the page that they are working, because genuinely, you think about how long it takes to find a piece of work in a child's book, multiply that by 30, and you're spending half an hour genuinely looking for the work rather than marking. So always have the books handed in open if you can. If you have a bookmark, attach it, because children and books and pieces of paper weren't ever designed to go together. So get a treasury tag. If you've got a bookmark that they're supposed to have on their books the whole time, get a treasury tag and attach it to the book itself, because the children will lose them, I promise you. And the third thing, which I can't emphasize enough, is get your schools to invest in oversized books. So oversized A4 or oversized A5, because this is a very, very particular and niche pet hate, but I really hate wasting time that could be saved with something else. And one of my pet hates of wasting time is trimming sheets of paper. Trimming sheets of paper to stick into a book. Now, sticking to a book is annoying enough, but if you've got an A3, A4 piece of paper, having to trim that 30 times, let's face it, most trimmers can manage a wad of 10 at best. Having to trim those sheets, if you're having to cut off the side and the base, that's 6 cuts. So that's about a minute and a half of your life that you're never going to get back. So get your schools to buy oversized. So they're only slightly larger than A4, but they're basically, you can stick an A4 sheet of paper in straight away, should you wish to stick a paper in. Now, let's say you are doing a whole load of photocopying. You know that some sheets have got to be printed. One thing you can do is you can actually stand by the photocopier and count out the 10 sheets and cut them as you're counting the next 10 sheets. So I tend to stack them quite efficiently like that. So I'm, if you see me at my school standing in front of the photocopier counting away, then that's, I'm afraid, sadly, my life to make life easier. But I try and avoid wherever possible doing that sort of thing, because it seems really, really daft to print out something that the children could recreate. So I try wherever possible to only print out something that they couldn't recreate quicker themselves. So next week, for example, there's a table that the children are producing, and I'm getting them to just draw the table using plastic things, straight edge, ruler, using a ruler. Whereas they're also disguising moths on bark. And so I've got some photographs of bark that they're going to stick into the books. Quite handy to have. They can't recreate bark. And actually also, what's the purpose of the lesson? It's not to draw bark, it's to disguise a moth. So that's the focus. Anyway, a little bit of nuggets for you. I do appreciate that there are some schools, this is the efficient schools, who have gone completely book free, and they're using folders and treasury tags rather than the elusive Pritt stick. We know, of course, that there are other glues available. And I hope I'm not breaking any rules by mentioning Pritt Stick, but it is supreme. You're not going to beat it. I always feel like when a school buys in glue sticks that aren't Pritt Stick, it's like when you ask for a Coke and they say, we've got Pepsi, and you think, okay, but it's not the same, is it really? Pritt Stick is very, very efficient. And I tell you the quality that it has. It's very good for sticking, but also it's quite flexible. So for the 30, you've got essentially 30 seconds of grace with a Pritt Stick, haven't you? 30 seconds where you can peel off that piece of paper and adjust it slightly, then stick it back down. But after that 30 seconds, it sticks like porridge to a cereal bowl, isn't it? That bad boy. Phenomenal. Anyway. That is a little bit of tips and advice from me. If you've got tips and advice, leap onto Twitter or X and let me know your tips for keeping track of books. Now, a jump of features, if you like, to give my voice a little break. We're going to go into Reset Wood.
Reset Wood.
Now, the irony of this jingle is that I've only done the woods once, even though I'm in the woods an awful lot. So I was in the woods on Tuesday. For those of you who are very keen on transport news, the M25 was closed a little while back. And the specific junction that was closed is the one that's nearest to me. I can hear the gentle hum of misery circulating just outside my window now. And so on Tuesday, I went for a little run and went over to the location of why that junction was actually closed. Well, why that junction of the M25 was closed. And the reason was that they were taking away a bridge. And what's more annoying is I love that bridge and I used to use it loads. So very frustrated about the fact they've closed. In fact, got rid of that bridge. I did miss it. Maybe I've gone too far. Maybe it literally is a bridge too far. But I'm hoping that they replace it because it makes it much more interesting for my runs. So anyway, me rambling. Obviously, that's what you've tuned in for, I'm assuming. We've only been to the wood once. This one is from a holiday I had 2 weeks ago on the Norfolk Broads. And I will play you the audio and then talk about it afterwards. I do get very, very philosophical in this one, and it's been lovely to listen back to it because I was at such a happy point there. So let's listen to my little visit to Broadland Conservation Centre in the Norfolk Broads.
It's dusk. I'm in Norwich. I'm not in Norwich. I'm in Norfolk, in a place called Ranworth, which is near to Norwich. It's a nature reserve. And I've just been quite sad. Come along here. Listen to nature. Take it in. Trying very hard not to breathe heavily onto the microphone. If I describe my scene to you, I've got a reed bed to my left. Full reed to my right. Looking through the reeds, I can see an ice flat, broad. There's no wind at all. It's like a mirror. And as I said, it's dusk, so it's quite beautiful. A silhouette of sky. A smudge of land in the distance. Reflection of... Well, if we're looking at the sky, it's a reflection of the past, isn't it? Of things that have been. And yet nature shows growth. I'm looking at these tall, dead reeds that have lived their life usefully, and now they're dead. Are broken down, either in the water or by the birds, and turned into nests for new life. And it's a reminder of the Japanese philosophy of wabi-sabi, which is nothing is perfect, nothing is finished. About that everything can be improved upon, and we're on a circle and on a cycle. I can't remember which book it was. Chiff Chaff. I can't remember what book it was that described an ending as just being a beginning again. But it's hugely accurate, isn't it? I'm going to walk along the pathway a bit now. Let you soak in the sounds of dusk. It's a concerto of birds chatting away to each other, to themselves, maybe like me. Stunning. I'm here on the 2nd of April. And it's mainly brown. Patches of colour. And the green is really pushing through. And it's hidden by the brown. A new life hidden by the old. Very deep. And I wonder how often we see the reeds. How often we see the reeds, but not the new life. Tawny owl. Broadwalk I'm looking at. It's quite beautiful. The pathway meanders through. Just exploring the natural environment. Makes me feel quite emotional, actually. How settled it is. How vibrant and verdant it's going to be. That this is a picture, a moment in time, a clarification of nature. And when something is clarified, it's cleared and cleansed. So all the dead around us is going to crumble away and actually end up being the moisture, the vibrancy for the new path. Every time I explain my thinking, I feel like I'm turning into a vicar or a preacher. What am I preaching? I'm preaching mental wealth. This is going in the bank. It's just so calm. We live hectic lives. Filled to the brim. We can't even wait for 2 minutes for a lift without scrolling on our phone. Getting those endorphin hits. And here I am, looking at reeds. And hopefully you're there, listening. Listening to the birds chatting, who aren't desperately checking their status, updates, buying the latest thing, but just living within this wonderful lifestyle pattern that they've created and should be protected. I'll leave you with that thought. As we walk along the Broadwalk in Ranworth, Norfolk.
So, that was the Broadwalk walk. As you heard, I got quite philosophical and maybe a little bit morose. I didn't intend to, but it's one of those ones where you're just surrounded by beautiful things. I'd had a lovely, lovely day with my family and my gorgeous children, and it gave me a really good chance to look at nature afresh and reset. Reset wood is exactly for that. It's to help us see things in a new light, I suppose. And again, I'm going to encourage you to get out as much as you possibly can, because it makes such a difference. I was along the canal this morning. Beautiful. Such a nice way to spend your time.
Hey, we've all done it. Rushed to the staff room to make a cup of tea, then taken it back to our classroom, forgotten about it, and then drunk it, cold and overbrewed. Well, now, don't even have the hassle of going to the staff room. Simply drink Colt. Colt is a cold tea alternative. It's literally cold tea, but without that tangy metallic taste of those cheap beakers that you use at work. Colt. Drink cold tea brewed by us.
So that's a big advert for Colt. Absolutely superb that people are still buying it, still making tea. Fantastic news. We're now going to go to the teaching zeitgeist for a little project, little excerpt, little moment in the show called Copper Bottoming.
Copper Bottoming.
This is from, of course, the film Robots, where Robin Williams plays a robot called Rodney Copperbottom, with his motto, see a need, fill a need. We're very good at solving things. So I asked on Twitter about how teachers set up for the day in the morning and packed up in the evening. So I'm going to talk about my routines to start off with, by and large. Sometimes it doesn't work well. And then afterwards, I'm going to share some of the sage advice that people on Twitter offered. So the first thing that I do is that I have a little list of things that I need to open up. I haven't made a particular order, but I know that I've got to open up these certain apps and programs every single day. So I have a little list, and I use it as a tiny little checklist to work through. I know that I've got to open up Sims for the inexorable register experience. I know that I'm going to be using PowerPoint every day, so I open that up. I open up my shared folders, and in fact, any folder that I use more than once a week, I get pinned to the left of my taskbar. Yes, we're in Windows, because then it's much, much easier to access. You don't have to keep on searching for it. And having watched people searching for folders in nested folders and nested folders, literally right-click on your folder and click on pin to my taskbar. And that is the way to actually have access to things much more quickly. So I did my little list. I do have a visual timetable, but frankly, it's a absolute pain to do. So what I have done is I have trained children to do it for me. I have a copy of my timetable, and the children who arrive early in the morning come to the timetable and have a look at it and then put it out as a visual timetable. I also correct the date, and I do that every morning, and I should really do that the day before. And actually, one of the tips that someone has put forward is that they correct their date and put their date on the night before. But I don't. I write the long date and the short date, and then I've got a little block calendar above my board where I can put the block date as well. So it's nice and easy and visual for everyone to see the date. And then I go about my business. Now, I'm quite close to my school at the moment physically. I'm not at this moment, literally now, and at this moment, sort of geographically in time. So I get there quite early, and I manage to flap around a little bit. unfortunately, but I do try my hardest to make sure that I'm productive because those minutes in the morning disappear. Before I leave in the evening, I try wherever possible to clear my desk. It's a really good strategy. I'm of the mindset, and I do know this of myself incredibly well, that I can't take things home. I'm useless at taking things home, so doing work at home. So I need to get everything done at school that I need to. And so I get that done and clear my desk wherever possible. And again, I find that the minutes in the morning go really fast, and the minutes at in the afternoon are where the productivity has diminished, certainly for me. I find it much, much easier to do things in the morning than after school. I found that I'm probably at 0.6 speed in the afternoon. You know, when you listen to a podcast at a slow pace, that's how my mind's working by then. I think having taught from the front for 5 hours of the day, it takes it out of me and I can't manage anymore. Unfortunately. So that's why my productivity is low. So I try to be as efficient as possible in the morning. And let's see what everyone else said. Well, I went online and asked what people did in the mornings and the afternoons, and I got some really, really good responses. So let's have a look. I'm looking at the question that I asked, and I've got some really, really good answers. So I'm just going to read some of these answers for you. First one is, a funny one from James Theo, who has the Joker meme walking away from an exploding hospital. And he says, this is how I leave at the end of the day. I'm then in at 7 a.m. the next morning when I'll sort out the chaos I've left behind. And I would say that probably he might sum up quite a few teachers in that way. It's quite a relatable icon, and quite a few people have responded well to it. Steph Elanol. I don't know. There's a series of vowels and consonants there. But I know her as Steph. Says that she gets any morning work done in bulk so she doesn't have to be the photocopier. Absolutely right. I feel like the photocopier should operate a little bit like Ryanair prices. That if you want to use the photocopier in the morning just before school starts, then it should charge your account more, or you get less biscuits at break time, something like that. Because what's weird about the photocopier is it's used at very, very specific moments and then sits around doing nothing for a lot of the day. There's obviously a joke there about SLT, but I'm not going to make it. Kimberly Evans says that writing effective lists helps her stay in control of her manic and bizarre workload. Developing a system for effective lists, and I think the lists are a good way of organising yourself. Mrs. W. Primary, who is possibly married to Mr. W. Primary, potentially. Great surname, especially for a teacher, says, always write the date the night before and a visual timetable. Lunch choices and good morning board when I come in. And that's a very, very good tip. And I think I might try and get into that habit of doing the date the night before, because it's the thing that I always forget. I forget Sims, to turn on Sims, which is why it's on my list now. And I always forget to do the date as well, so the children remind me to do that. Dolly Middlemiss says, do a register as the children enter the room, if possible. Then you know exactly who's in. As soon as they're in, get PowerPoints up for the day. So that is when you use the joyful freeze button on your interactive whiteboard so that you can have the morning slide up. Or if you've got a message, you can have that slide up, and then you can go through the register at the same time. It's quite a clever strategy. Try and get everything ready for the day ahead the night before. Fine-tune planning, worksheets, PowerPoints, resources, etc. Marking done and away. This is an organised teacher. My goodness, thank you, Dolly. She also says, clear your desk every night. It's easier to do it once a day than have a mahoosive, exactly her word, pile that groans insane. Remember, keep what you need, decide what you want, bin the rest. Deal with things that can be done quickly, straight away. Plan for things that need thought. That's really good, actually, to plan things for thought. There's a very popular strategy for workflow that says that you need to look at the work that you're doing, overestimate how long it will take, and then book meetings with yourself to do that work. And that appears on your calendar as a meeting. So I'm busy with completing this, I'm completing this. Someone who has a locked Twitter account, so I'm not going to say their name, says, I'm not a morning person, so if possible, I don't leave until the only thing I need to do in the morning is to switch on my laptop and load up my screen. I can't say I streamline much of an evening, although there's a lot of faffing, so reading these tips with interest. And I've got some other tips to share with you of interest in a moment. Dr. David Priest says, I used to keep a live Eisenhower grid on a Word doc. Could also do it in Pages planners on a whiteboard. An Eisenhower grid. End of the day, reset the grid and move pieces around if needed. Much easier on a Word doc. So I'm going to have to look up an Eisenhower grid. I think it's the important and urgent matrix. Let's have a look. I should have looked this up before, but it's appeared. Oh, okay, it is. So imagine a grid in front of you. It's got two titles along the top, two columns, and two titles for the two rows. On the top, it's got urgent, not urgent. And along the side, it's got important and then not important. And so you obviously place items that you've got to do in this grid. And the top left is the urgent and important. And it's called the do box. Do it now. And then you've got the important and non-urgent, which is decide. Schedule a time to do it. And then down, you've got the urgent but not important. Delegate. Who can do it for you? This has not been written by a teacher. And then finally, the not important and not urgent, which is delete. So to get rid of, not urgent, so get rid of it. I don't think they mean that literally. I think they mean, you know, tidy it away. But that's the Eisenhower grid. Absolutely fantastic. Now, there were a few more answers. I'm just going to see if I can find the other answers. No, I can't. I'll have another little look. Because there were some really, really good answers. And I've also got what, interestingly, ChatGPT says about this. So I'm going to go and have a look at what ChatGPT said. I asked ChatGPT for teaching streamlining tips for the morning and the afternoon. Now, I've got a mixed relationship with ChatGPT, if I'm honest. Some things about it I love, some things I hate. For example, I asked it to do quite a complex thing today, and it made it even more complex, and it didn't work. And then when I had a go at the task myself, but had a few faults with it, it was a coding challenge actually, for something I'm coding. And I was struggling and I couldn't work out how to correct the errors. I put the code in and it worked out what the errors were straight away, solved them. So these are the ChatGPT suggestions. Here are some tips and routines for teachers in the UK to streamline their processes at the beginning end of the day. Setting up the day ahead, it says. One, plan ahead. Before leaving school the previous day, take a few minutes to jot down a to-do list for the next day. This can help you start the day with a clear plan in mind. Good advice. Number two, prepare materials. Organise and set out any materials or resources you'll need for the lessons the next day. This could include photocopying handouts, setting up presentations or arranging props. Now, if you've got a lesson with a prop, I want to hear about it. Three, check technology. Ensure that any technology you'll be using, such as projectors or interactive whiteboards, is working properly. This can save time troubleshooting in the morning. That's fair. I think that's a really sensible idea. Sorry, I'm slightly distracted by the word props. I think it's a great idea for a future episode. What props, what things are you bringing in which you wouldn't normally expect to find in your bag or in a person's bag? I'm sure that there have been people on the district line carrying pineapples for a tasty retelling of Handa Surprise, for example. I'm going to ask that in a future episode. Number four, set up the classroom. Arrange desks, chairs and any learning stations to optimise the space of the day's activities. This can help create a conducive learning environment from the start. That's a good tip again. Number five, review lesson plans. Take a quick look over your lesson plans for the day to refresh your memory and mentally prepare for what's ahead. Nice. And then six, I think they got excited and missed the point here. They said personalise your space. Adding personal touches to your classroom can create a welcoming atmosphere. Consider displaying student work or incorporating elements that reflect your personality and teaching style. And then it says your tip for leaving at the end of the day. It says, number one, reflect on the day. Take a few minutes to reflect on how the day went. What went well? What could be improved? This reflection can inform your planning for future lessons. What a sensible tip. Really, really good idea. Number two, tidy up. Shut up, ChatGPT. You're just picking on me now. It says, encourage students to help tidy up the classroom at the end of the day. This can include putting away materials, straightening desks, and cleaning up any messes. Number three, organise for tomorrow. Before leaving, take a few moments to tidy your desk and organise any materials you need for the next day. This can help you start the day with a clean slate. Number four, communicate with colleagues. If there are any important updates or messages for your colleagues, make sure to communicate them before leaving. This can help keep everyone on the same page. Number five, power down. Turn off lights, computers, projectors, and any other electronic devices to conserve energy overnight. And I think that is totally reasonable suggestion. Sensible too. Number six, secure the classroom. Well, hopefully that should be done. But it does say, ensure that windows and doors are locked and any valuable or sensitive materials are safely stored away. Number seven, set boundaries. Try to establish boundaries between work and personal time. Once you leave school, try to resist the urge to check work emails or do lesson planning until the next day. Really, really good advice. I'm quite impressed, actually, by ChatGPT's efforts there, because I think that they're decent suggestions. So that being said, you can feel free to message me and let me know any other suggestions that you would have for the start of the day or the end of the day in our feature of copper bottoming. Many thanks.
Foodfully, meal kits designed by teachers for teachers. Simply grab the food fling bag from your fridge, throw it in the microwave for a couple of minutes, then pour the baking hot ingredients straight into a bowl, where you can eat it at leisure whilst falling asleep watching Netflix. Pour any remainder into that strange Tupperware container you've got hidden at the back of the cupboard and take it into work the next day. Food fling. Food fling.
Well, cheeky little end of the jingle, followed by the next part of the jingle. We're going to go to the news in a moment. We were talking about what Ofsted might recreate their judgments as. We talked about icons such as emojis and one or two words being replaced into a long statement. And what people are looking for is a flavour of the school itself. I'd be interested to hear what you think about that. But for now, we're going to go to Talk Teacher Radio News. So let's listen to the news for this week. It starts with our sponsors, and we are very grateful for them for supporting all the shows that you're able to listen to on Teacher Talk Radio.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support headteachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
According to reports on the BBC News website, the EU wants to agree a deal with the UK that would make it easier for people aged between 18 and 30 to study abroad in the wake of Brexit. The European Commission says it would be a limited arrangement, not the restoration of freedom of movement. The UK already has schemes with some non-EU countries, and these allow people to come to the UK for up to 2 years. Downing Street says it's open to extending this to individual EU members rather than throughout the EU, but prefers country-by-country deals. The proposed EU scheme has time limits, and UK participants would only be able to stay in the EU country that accepted them. The report goes on to say that it would reduce controls on young people moving between the UK and EU. The European Commission says it is stepping in after the UK approached several EU countries to discuss deals. The Commission says it risked differential treatment of EU citizens and there should be a bloc-wide deal for equality. The UK turned down an offer to continue participating in the EU's Erasmus student exchange after Brexit, but did replace it with the Turing scheme, which provides exchanges worldwide. The BBC South East team have covered concerns expressed by some students that they may run out of ADHD medication during the upcoming exam period. Some students have reported rationing their medication in order to stretch it out following reports of shortages due to an increase in demand and manufacturing issues. ADHD medications are often controlled drugs, which means prescriptions are limited to a month's supply, although some pharmacies also struggle to fill even this. The NHS advises against any changes of dosage without medical advice, but families continue to feel anxious about the possibility of young people struggling through the exam season. The Guardian reports on findings from communications regulator Ofcom, which suggests that a quarter of 3- and 4-year-olds in the UK now own a smartphone. Half of children under 13 are on social media. Online activity by infant school-aged children is rising. These findings could boost the argument of those urging the government to clamp down on social media and phone use by young children. A consultation will likely be launched in coming weeks, according to sources in government. This could include a proposal to ban mobile phone sales to under 16s, one to make it easier for parents to use parental controls on devices, and one to raise the minimum age for social media sites from 13 to 16. Michelle Donlan, Technology Secretary, said children as young as 5 should not be accessing social media. The Ofcom figures come amid what The Guardian says is growing evidence of the impact of social media use amongst children, and the US government refers to it as a profound risk to mental health. The book The Anxious Generation, published in March by a US academic, has been cited as influencing thinking in number 10. The Ofcom survey was based on 2,480 parents of children aged between 3 and 17. The TES reports that absence rates are up again according to latest DfE figures. This is compared with spring 2022-23. This is despite the government's ongoing attendance drive. Overall absence for last term was 7.3%, slightly up on the 7% in the previous year. The Department for Education said the rise was likely to have been caused by a higher level of illness absence. The proportion of persistently absent pupils has also slightly increased to 21.9% of pupils who were missing 10% or more half days. The figures for disadvantaged pupils are worse when compared to their peers. Full details of the latest data can be found on TES.com. Finally, the TES also features a report that the Department for Education does not intend to replace current progress measures, known as Progress 8, for the next 2 years. After exploring alternatives, there will be no progress measures published for schools in England in 2024-25 or 2025-26. The cancellation of Year 6 SATs during the pandemic meant that there was no Key Stage 2 attainment data available as a baseline for Progress 8 calculations. Headline attainment measures will still be published and grading will take place as normal. The Department for Education says it intends to return to Progress 8 in 2026-27. Teaching unions welcome the announcement, but some described it as a missed opportunity to rethink performance tables overall. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Joe Fox.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Well, that was the news there. Thank you very much, Joe Fox, and really interesting sort of aspects there that we haven't really considered with children as young as five using devices. It's kind of scary, really, isn't it? The level that they are using their devices and how used to it they are. I am afraid one of those judgy older types who get frustrated when children are using an iPad in a restaurant or a phone, just watching some mindless TV, because I had children before devices, and so I know that it's possible. In fact, one of the highlights, I would say some of my happiest moments with my family are when we're sitting around a table talking and chatting together as a family. And I think you're missing a trick if you're using a device with a child that age. Anyway, time for another feature.
In the dock.
So in the dock is a very, very simple feature. Basically, we talk about the fact that something might be controversial or not. And this week in the dock is handover days. So are handover days a good thing or a bad thing? How can we improve them? How can we get rid of them? For those who don't know, a handover day is when a class, say let's a year three class, spends some time with their new teacher as a year four class. It can vary from half an hour to half a day. It can vary from the teachers knowing the class they've got and the children knowing the teacher they've got, and they're discovering that on that day or discovering it and then a week later having that time. Are they useful? Are they beneficial? Here's my thought. Guilty. Big old waste of time. I would suggest that 20 minutes is a great time for you to introduce the class. Yourself to the class and take any questions. I would suggest that it's far more effective for you as a teacher in year three to spend a morning in class with the children that you're going to teach next year. As much as you can, because seeing them working for someone else is showing you exactly how they work for that person and showing you their work ethic and their dynamic. You're going to get far more from observing the children than you are from simply looking at the way that they are occupying themselves in front of you for a handover morning or afternoon or day. Some schools do it for a whole day, so waste of time. There we go. That's my opinion. Never mind.
Hey, education content publishers. We know what it's like. You've got some cracking slides, but they're just too short. Well, worry no more. We can now offer Slide Bloat. We can add extra slides, add click-ins so numbers fly in and fly out, up to 20 actions per slide. Get that boring old deck of 13 slides up to 46, so it's more than a minute per slide. Really frustrate teachers, but justify your cost price and make those slides really bloaty. Hey.
Thank you very much. That was Slide Bloat, a way of making your slides a little bit longer. Sorry for the jingles. I don't know what's going on with my my page at the moment. It seems to be quite lively, I'm sure. This is a little feature, just to finish this off, with called Spineless.
Spineless.
Now, I am an obsessive reader, and I sometimes cover on this section of the show books that are related to education. And this one I've been toying with, but I've decided that I am going to go for it, only because I have used it in class. But it's not an education book, it's a fiction book. I'm going through a really strong UK dystopia phase at the moment, loving dystopian novels, loving brilliant writing, and this was just phenomenal. It's my first five-star read of the year. It's called Dreamland by Rosa Rankin-Gee. What's lovely about it, sort of the icing on the cake, it's brilliant writing, beautiful writing. It's a really good storyline. I felt quite emotional reading it, actually. Yet it's very simple, very clever, very sparse. So I wrote to Rosa Rankin-Gee saying how much I loved the book, and didn't hear anything back for a little while, which is unusual for writers, I have to say. Anyway, she eventually replied to me. I wasn't expecting a reply, but about a week later she said, "That arrived just in time. Thank you so much for saying so." So the book Dreamland is effectively about a girl growing up and coming of age and falling in love and realizing how the world works in a very, very futuristic life on the east coast of Kent, where it's set in the near future, where the climate has increased and water levels are rising, and people are left to themselves to fend for themselves, and the government decides to divide up the country, and those people who make taxes in that part of the country get the taxes spent on them. So obviously in a poor area, Thanet, which they call Planet Thanet, it becomes a bit of an island itself, and they're left to their own vices to suffer. What I'm going to read is a series of quotes that I highlighted because I just thought the writer was beautiful. As I said, it's sparse and yet crisp and precise. And when I was teaching my year six class, I was sharing with them, and I think that really important to share the journey that you go with reading with your children. Tell the children what you're reading. Tell the children how you're interested in your books and read sections to them. There's a lot in this book I could not read, but there's a part where they're falling in love. She's falling in love with someone, the main character. And I wanted to read these bits to the children because they're so beautifully written. And yet they don't use complex terminology or inelegant language. It really is a really, really simple wording. There's a writer called Randall Munro, and he wrote a book called Thing Explainer, where he explains complicated things using only the most top 500 most common words. And it's very clever thinking about that economy with words. And the danger we have in primary schools is that we encourage greater vocabulary, expansive vocabulary, think of alternatives, use synonyms all the time. And you end up with this word salad, this jumble of language that actually stripped back would be so much more elegant. And I wonder if we've shot ourselves in the foot slightly about, rather than crafting these verbose pylons of vocabulary, we think instead about making our writing pared back and careful and thoughtful and considered. So here are some lines from Rosa Rankin-Gee. "You looked at everything like your eyes were drinking." That's from page 109. I'm going to read it again because I read over it myself. "You looked at everything like your eyes were drinking." Oh, isn't that just the most glorious sentence? Like your eyes were drinking. You can absolutely... And that writing, there is no word there that someone in year four or year five wouldn't know. And it shows a hunger, and yet it's using thirst. And there's an awful lot about, in this book about water and about the danger of water and the scarcity of clean water and tears and sweat. And so that ties in so perfectly. Rosa writes on her blog or website that this book took 6 years to write, and you can absolutely see why, because each sentence is just so thoughtfully crafted. Later on in page 125, she's fallen in love with this other girl, and I can't recall now what age they are. I think quite young, maybe 17, 18, and just reading this line is just making my heart sore. This is the line from page 125. "My chest felt like it was made of tissue paper, not enough weight in it, the air finding ways to lift it." There's so much going on there. My chest felt like it was made of tissue paper. It felt fragile. It felt delicate. It felt crumpled. not enough weight in it, so weak. The air finding ways to lift it. And there's that aspect of your life soaring and that experience of it soaring. Absolutely gorgeous. And this is where she's protecting herself. And she's put, it was easier to be silly. Make a hard surface. Let your beams bounce back off me. So it's about putting up your shield, putting up your protection there, which I really, really like. Another quote here. This is from page 215. I have to read this really carefully. A million ifs crowded into a split second. Now that's just, what an extraordinary sentence. It's poetry. A million ifs crowded into a split second. That to me tells me that there sometimes can be a point at which you reach choke, where you can't make a decision because everything is cascading through your mind, a dervish of ideas and decisions and challenges. And that sums it up, a million ifs crowded into a split second. I sometimes see these puntastic or amusing neon lights, the only way is up, girls just got to have fun. They're often in underground bars. And if I was to have one of those neon lights, I'd have the phrase, a million ifs crowded into a split second as part of it, because I just think that's just beautiful. Later on, we meet a character called Cole, K-O-L-E, and even that is clever. Like, he is a nasty piece of work, literally nasty. And you can read the tension ramped up in the book when this character arrives. And there's a certain way. And I think that even his name choice is clever, because certainly you'd have Cole would normally be spelt C-O-L-E, but we've got a hard K there, K-O-L-E. Secondly, Cole represents coal. It's blackened, it's hard, calloused and rough and turgid, and he's incredibly violent, and he is bristling with violence, that hum of violence underneath his skin. We've been in pubs sometimes where you look at someone and you think, well, I'm gonna steer a course slightly away from that person, because you can feel a bristle of tension with them. And Cole is like that throughout. This is one of the lines from Dreamland about Cole. His name fell like rain in my head. And that's the sheer weight of his name and the gravity of his name. It's just extraordinary, extraordinary writing. Later on, she writes about him again. And this is the character reflecting on him. And she put, how he'd found space in me for fear. And left it there. I mean, it's just incredible. How he'd found space in me for fear and left it there. And again, I read this to, in fact, I read it to two classes, these different quotes. And we decided that all of those words, someone in year two could know. Someone in year seven, who's 7 years old would know. So the art of the writer is to think about what message you want to get across. Because I tell the children that the art of the writer is to put the picture in your head into the reader's head. And what I think is extraordinary about this writing is that Rosa has written a book where she's put actual feelings into word form that I can absolutely relate to and place. How he'd found space in me for fear and left it there. So it shows that there was almost no capacity for fear, and yet he'd found a space. He'd pushed that fear in and he'd deliberately left it there. He'd sewn her up. I'm going to end the show on that because I think it's just extraordinary writing. And if we are in the business of sharing our knowledge and being aspirational for our pupils, then we need to offer aspiration. We need to be living embodiments of that. And I would say one of my greatest strengths, which is a really weird one to offer, is that I love reading. I'm passionate about reading. And that comes across in my teaching because it sets me up. The things I learn about, the things that I understand are often from reading and cogitating and thinking on those things. And the language that I use comes from reading and exemplified by the things that I have read. And if we want the children to be good writers, then we've got to show good writing. And it doesn't have to be torn apart texts and model poetry and books that you love so much that you take apart with a class until they hate those books as well. Good writing shouldn't be like that. And good reading shouldn't be like that. It should be, look at this beauty. Look at this beauteous sentence. Wouldn't it be lovely to write like this? So having that line on the top of the screen and saying, come on, let's find another way of expressing that someone has put fear inside you. Because it's an extraordinary moment, isn't it? An extraordinary moment. Good news. They're turning Dreamland into a TV program. I think it's on the BBC. I think it's going to be next year. I'm so excited about it because I love the storyline, and I'm just hoping that Rosa has some involvement in the writing because it is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Anyway, I'm going to leave you, folks. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Just going to have a quick look. Having brought the show to a close, I'm going to have a quick look and see if anyone else has contributed some suggestions. I've got three more suggestions. So, Ian Addison, lovely man, says, I have printed a little list of stuff for each day. On Monday, I check their stars from Doodle Maths, and on Thursday, I print Star of the Week, etc. Just those little admin-y jobs that need doing. That's a brilliant piece of advice. Miss C says, my mentor always said, no matter what, do the date and the visual timetable the night before, and it really does help. Just one thing ticked off. I also try to make sure everything is tidy before I leave so I don't walk into it the next day, and I hate my yesterday self. Yeah, absolutely. Do stuff for today that will benefit you tomorrow. I know it's Nike that advertised their one of their slogans is yesterday you said tomorrow, which I think is really clever. Such a clever little line. And finally, Geordie Cat Nick Rich says, I used to do my planning for the following week on Thursday night, then do all my copying for the week ahead on a Friday. I only worked mornings. Then I'd sort everything into a file folder for the coming week so every morning I could just get out that lesson's resources. What great tips. I love that. So here's my pledge. I'm going to try really hard to do my date every single evening rather than in the morning. That being said, it's been lovely chatting to you. My voice needs a rest now. I'm going to say goodbye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.